This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. I welcome Dramaticus, Michael Vlahos, to comment on the war in the 21st century. We are Roman citizens, it's 91 AD, coming winter, here in Londinium, the turbulent Thames, and at the same time, the retired centurions around us providing us security and good companionship. We're aquis class. We don't work. We have Greeks who work for us. That's important. Greeks are very good workers. And on Sundays, we often sit around and speculate about the 21st century and the tangle that our European descendants have got themselves into in what is called the Ukraine War, going on for many years, involving elements of Europe that were completely different to themselves 120 years ago, completely different, totally, can't recognize it. But underneath all of the prejudices is a story, and the stories are ongoing of tribes and duchies and baronies and affection and empires underneath what we can see in the 21st century. So we're going to turn to looking at Europe from Moscow's point of view, what Moscow sees now, what are the options for Moscow. And then we'll look at Europe from Keith's point of view, what Keith sees now, those two things. And then we'll ask the question, how does Moscow, how does Keith, how does the rest of Europe think about what the U.S. did in Iraq in 2011 and in Afghanistan in 2021? How do they think about it when they come to look at the future for the Ukraine war? A very good evening to you, Germanicus. Moscow's point of view, looking at the Ukraine war now and its options. Thank you.
Good evening, Gaius. A powerful watershed, you know, that ineffable line where you're going up a mountain chain and then you reach the point where the birth of the rivers starts going downward in the other direction. I think that watershed has been reached this past week and reached in a presentation by the second most important, or at least most vital, leader in today's Russia, and that's Dmitry Medvedev. And Medvedev made a presentation which has reached into every corner of today's Russian Federation. And he made a point of picking up and holding aloft the metaphor of the most famous speech at the inception of the Great Patriotic War, the most famous speech of any Soviet leader in the 20th century. And this was Vyacheslav Molotov. And his speech ended with, "Our cause is just. The enemy shall be defeated. Victory will be ours." And Medvedev took that ringing clarion call from 22nd June 1941, and he made it the theme and the meme of how this war in Ukraine is going to end. Basically, the gauntlet has been thrown down. Whereas in the early part of 2022, Mr. Putin was prepared to meet with Mr. Zelensky in Istanbul and come up with a compromise that would suit both Russians and Ukrainians, a mutual accommodation, and Zelensky and his regime would stay in power as long as they did their own internal purge of the Banderites and the neo-Nazis. All of that was dissolved, thinking of Shakespeare and The Tempest, by the United States and the United Kingdom in the form of Boris Johnson arriving as the envoy plenipotentiary who would convey the message that has led to the destruction of Ukraine, the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian men, 1 million casualties in total. And that message was, we will support you if you fight to the end. And they have done so. Ukraine has responded heroically, and now they were nearing the end. And what Medvedev laid down is a pathway to the final triumph that will occur. The fall of Kiev, meaning the end of the regime, the creation of a new Ukrainian state, most likely in the mirror image, structurally and spiritually, of today's Belarus, and then the consolidation and reincorporation of Novorossiya into the renewed Russian Federation. In other words, Russia is going for a full renovatio, as we Romans would say, the renewal of Mother Russia and its recreation again as a whole polity, a whole vision, a whole national identity, with Belarus and Ukraine, of course, as associated polities, just as Kazakhstan, et cetera, et cetera. And the pathway that Russia has chosen is going to be completed at some point in the coming months. This is Russia's commitment. And toward that commitment, what Russia has managed to do is mobilize something like 700,000 soldiers who are not committed to the front lines in Ukraine, who are in readiness. They're not on the front lines or the line of contact. They're not in the trenches on the Western Front, as it were. They are in readiness. So Russia has put together the means to engage in what we have talked about for some time, because it's been developing for some time, and that is a war termination operation. And moreover, they're signs that Russia has managed to turn the tide to realize such a war-ending dynamic in terms of its capacity to degrade Ukrainian military forces. In other words, if we are to look at the use of drones by Ukraine, by Russia, what we see is a very clear pattern of orders of magnitude increase of drone delivery month by month. And so in just this September, the delivery of drones has been 5 or 6 or 8 times what it was in August. And so you can see across the board the capacity of Russia to degrade Ukraine just keeps increasing. The recent release of Fab 1500 guided bombs. These are 1500 kilogram bombs. That means 3,300 pounds. That is an enormous ordnance, a package. It will destroy anything. And they're now in operation. Also, you have Russian artillery at a level of production, along with North Korean deliveries of a promised 10 million 152 millimeter shells. All this presages a very visible capacity on the part of Russia to prosecute this war-ending operation. The only question really is when it will be initiated or unleashed.
I want to contribute a little detail to Manicus in conversation with Moscow in these last days. I learned that there are drone factories going up in unusual places around Moscow. Just suddenly, yes. Whole villages are being revived. The drone factory shows up, it's under construction, and they're looking for workers. So we've got a defense business in Russia, 2,000 enterprises engaged in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the budget is pouring into building up defense. They had let theirs drift the way the U.S. let its drift. And they're now very aggressively rearming.
This is very interesting because these literally cottage industries producing drones are very reminiscent of how the pre-industrial or incipiently industrial 18th century Britain produced Brown Bess muskets, because they farmed out all the parts of a musket, and one little company would make just one single part. And they were able, actually, before the Industrial Revolution, to have parts interchangeability and to produce hundreds of thousands of muskets. And if you look at videos which are out there on these little shops producing drones, they're producing tens or hundreds of thousands of them. Iran is distributing its own drones to Russia, and they're very sophisticated. And in fact, Russian drones now are able to go behind the lines of 40 to 50 miles, taking circuitous routes and destroy whatever their target happens to be. In other words, we're now looking at a situation where Russia, having doubled or tripled its defense expenditure, which is still a relatively modest 7% of GDP, is getting so much more bang from the buck from their investment than the U.S. possibly could, in large part because of the structural problems with a highly financialized U.S. military-industrial complex, which cannot expand, for example, its production of shells until 2025, whereas Russia has doubled and tripled and is now producing, who knows, 5 million shells a year. But the fact is that the Russian war economy is moving, and it has what it needs to finish the war, to achieve Medvedev's promise.
Our cause is just. Let's turn to Kiev's point of view. After Mr. Zelensky in New York, Mr. Zelensky in Washington, and the answer from the U.S. Congress when we come back. This is the Friends of History Debating Society with Germanicus, Mark of Laos. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. It's Londinium. It's peaceful. And we're speculating. We're observing. We're not prophesying, because we're talking about the past, how Mother Russia has dealt with ugly wars before, and how it resolves ugly wars. There can't be anything more ugly than the Great Patriotic War. It was awful for years and still curses the land. Vladimir Putin lost his older brother he never knew, who died in an orphanage alone during the siege of Leningrad. It's on all their minds all the time. They win ugly. When we come back, Kiev knows this. Kiev was part of the winning ugly in 1945. What is its point of view? I'm John Batchelor.